So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Way.
Blair once again hooking that bottom rope and looking from behind. Oh, Justice got rid of Hall. I don't like the looks of things now. There are no friends. There are no friends. Only enemies. Why is Hulk upset? Quick, he said, you stole my belt.
Quick,
and look at this. Hulk's there, holding on, trying to pull him out. It's Flair from behind. Oh, yes,
yes, yes, yes, yes.
Flair did it.
Yes, 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 yes. He did it. I told you,
ladies and gentlemen,
I told you, myself.
Welcome to Review Away, everyone. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. How are you doing today, Wei?
Good.
Happy Chinese New Year, because we're recording this on Chinese New Year.
Yes, we are. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much.
What did you do for Chinese New Year's Eve?
Chinese New Year's Eve. I spent it with my family. We just had dinner at my aunt's place and got to see my cousins and their dog, this big husky type of dog. And
what's the dog's name?
Coda.
Coda?
Yeah. Coda. what did you do?
This past weekend, I got an email from you.
What was that?
I wanted to reply to it. From Wei Ting.
What was the email?
It says, "Hello, friend. I've learned that things don't always work out as planned. This is so unique. I knew things couldn't get any worse. And then there is a link to some random website. Now everyone recognizes me. The sky is the limit. Talk to you soon." And this was sent out to a bunch of people in your address book. So you were spammed, Wei.
Dude, I'm sorry, man. That never happens to me. So, wow, I'm sorry about that. And anybody else who received this from me, I've actually received a bunch from myself. I got one yesterday. It says, "Hello, friend. This is from me. I've learned that things don't always work out as planned. This is so unique."
Yeah, this is the one I got.
Oh, you just,
yeah, just read that.
I don't usually pay attention.
The sky is the limit. I don't know why, but I got that Saturday night, and I thought it was hilarious. Hello, friend.
Well, I wonder if I've ever gotten anything from you, but you know what? I'll check that out.
How does that happen, where you get spammed? Is it just...
Hey, if I knew, I probably wouldn't get spammed. It's just they probably check your email. And you know what? Maybe they check your MSN. Maybe that could be it.
That's crazy.
I think
they can have access to your contacts and just send shit out.
I think
too many times I've gotten emails from people and it's just random. I'm stranded in the middle of nowhere and I need money.
Yeah.
Please send it.
Yeah, that's terrible. I feel sorry. That's a terrible way of communicating, of advertising.
Imagine you were legit stranded somewhere and you got to your phone and you were able to send out an email saying, "I'm stranded and I need money."
I do have to say, though, I always get hear from my mom, who checks her email, and she's like, you should check this out. There's a great deal. There's this great deal that people are offering for the for this cruise. Oh, check this out. Or all my friends are asking me to join Facebook. How do they even know that I'm I have an email? It's like some bullshit like that. Like, it works on people like her.
Do you remember that time right before the surf when I some agency called me saying I had won a trip to Florida? Yeah. Were you there for that?
No, I wasn't.
Well, anyway, they called, and so I stayed on the line. And I get forwarded to the next person, and I just play it up. I'm like, I'm going to Florida? And they were like, sir, you will be, but I have to explain the rules. I was like, I don't care what the rules are. I'm going to Florida. It's been my dream to go to Florida. Yeah. So I'm like, well, sir, let me just explain here. And he goes into all the rules, and it's just to get you on the line where if you pay for a trip to go to New York City, mm-hmm. you will get a discount to go within a year or two. You can't go within X amount of days, but you have to do it within a certain window of time to go to Florida.
Wait, so I have to go to New York to
You have to pay up- for a trip in order to get a discount on another trip.
Okay, so, but would I be able to go on the trip, on my trip to New York?
No, you have to pay for that completely.
So I'm going to New York just to pay.
Yes.
And then I have to go back home after.
To Florida. So you're actually probably paying more than to just go straight to Florida yourself.
Okay. All right. And what happened?
I was calling him on this. I was like, well, that is not what you said. You said I won a trip to Florida, and there is nothing I have won here. I have technically won a car, which I could go buy.
Yeah.
That's not winning a car. Mm-hmm. That is something has been presented to me with a price tag attached to it. Yeah. A very extreme one.
I would have loved to have heard that. So the next time, I suggest to you, John.
I'm recording all my calls from
yes,
now
please.
On.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Oh, I hate that. That would be the worst job in history, is being one of those fuckers who have to call people to win prizes.
No, a lot of people do it. And I'm sure, you know what, by at some point, hearing the reactions that they must hear, you probably do it with a smile on your face the moment you hear somebody with a funny reaction.
Yeah, but I just see all of that, it just builds in the person. Sure, they laugh it off, but it's like, I am about to call someone and they are going to yell at me. Mm. You know what kind of feeling that is? That's like being a traffic cop, where you know, all you do is give bad news to people.
It's like being a heel in a pro wrestling match.
Yeah,
so
I guess
you can learn to embrace it.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of heels, Ric Flair was a heel in 92.
He was.
And that is what is going to take us into the Royal Rumble of 1992, a fondly remembered Rumble. And this was the event that you guys voted on to review. All the way back Sunday, January the 19th of 1992.
Mm-hmm.
From the Knickerbocker Arena in Albany, New York.
Does that still exist?
Yes, but it has a different name. In fact, TNA just did a house show there about a week ago.
I'm very curious.
The Knickerbocker Arena.
Is this where the Knicks played?
The Knicks played at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is now the Times Union Center.
Oh, that does not have the same ring to it, does it?
Not nearly as good, no.
I am going to say right off the top, the highlight of this show for me was not Ric Flair.
Really?
It was the air horns and those little like rattle things whenever someone would come out for the rumbles.
Man.
Those air horns added so much atmosphere to
you
this
like
show.
That, huh?
I do. Listen, I understand air horns are a horrendous sound, but in this close proximity with this arena, I thought it was just added something to it.
Oh, I don't know about the air horns, but I do have to say the way this crowd sounded, the way
this crowd was so hot, it was depressing, man.
It was amazing.
I can never imagine next week's Royal Rumble or this coming Sunday's Rumble having this kind of heat. Maybe it will, but this crowd was hot for everything from top to bottom.
Have you ever thought about why that was? I mean, aside from, you know, the product being so hot.
The product wasn't hot at this point. This
really?
Was 92. I mean, this was when business was down.
I guess you're right. Well, what about the age of the audience? What did you think of the... did you think that had anything to do with it?
There were definitely, I don't know what all the makeup was. I saw a wide range. Like there were kids, but there were lots of adults at this. Hmm. And people who really seemed to be in it. I mean, the parents that were into the Bushwhackers.
Oh my God.
That one heavy man that they focused on.
That was something else, man. The Bushwhackers. I mean, we'll get into that later.
I was, this is one of my favorite pay-per-view events. This was one of this might have been the first WWF pay-per-view I ever saw in my life.
Really? Wow.
This might have been my first rental ever.
You picked a good one.
Yeah. So I started off high. In fact, I think this was the first wrestling pay-per-view I ever rented.
Wow.
So I have a lot of nostalgia for this event. So I was looking this up online and found the Royal Rumble 1992 countdown show.
Did you?
They had a half-hour pre-show. And so I watched this pre-show, and it was so weird because they shot a 22-minute show, but there's no commercials on the previews channel. So the last 8 minutes is just a graphic with the countdown. Wow. They timed it to like 22 minutes.
Yeah, that's odd.
Maybe it was like a Barker show they sent out to cable networks to air.
Perhaps. Yeah, perhaps you saw the raw footage, the raw tape.
So not too much on the countdown show, but the one big thing was just the promos on this. It was just one guy after the next, mm-hmm. just great promos.
Yeah.
And that kind of continued on to this show. I got to see the 24/7 version of this Rumble. So all the WWF names were censored out.
Yeah, as did I.
And the fuckers redid the Royal Rumble theme. They put another theme on top of this.
Did
that
they?
That synthesizer theme that you are not a fan of and I love.
What do they put? Saliva?
No, they did. They put some random generic tune on.
Oh, no.
I was so upset at this.
How could they?
So already,
why would
it's
they?
Not 10 out of 10 for
Hold
me.
Hold on a second. Why would they do that? Do they not own the rights to this theme?
It's an in-house theme. Why would you change it? I'm just thinking maybe they didn't like it. I have no idea, but that is one of my favorite pay-per-view themes, was that old Royal Rumble theme.
Well, you have great taste in music.
And you actually do, so you will not besmirch your credibility.
This is no Mr. Wazow on the Royal Rumble soundtrack.
Maybe Ring of Honor will incorporate Mr. Wazow.
I highly doubt it.
Yeah. They probably fuck up the song. They put an instant replay on it, on the loop. So anyway, the shitty theme introduces us as Gene Okerlund runs down all of the competitors in the Rumble. And Ric Flair, everyone had like some brief title for them. And they gave like, you know, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, former world champion Randy Savage, and then alleged real world's champion Ric Flair, which was the storyline going into this, that he had come over from the NWA, WCW, and the title, which could not be shown on television because it was intellectual property of another company, was blurred out throughout his first couple of months in the WWF. And here he is going into the Rumble to win the real title.
Mm-hmm.
So, announcers Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan.
Yep.
Bobby Heenan, I forgot he called this one.
Did you? You're being sarcastic.
I did not. And they update everybody on Bret Hart dropping the Intercontinental title the Friday before this Rumble in Springfield, Massachusetts, to the Mountie, where Bret Hart went into the ring with a 104-degree fever.
That's pretty high.
Have you ever had a fever that high?
Probably. I would think so.
I don't know if I've ever had a fever that high. That's extreme.
Did he say 140 or
104? 104. 140, he would be in trouble.
104. I mean, that's possible, right?
Yeah, 104 is totally possible.
Yeah.
My brother once had a fever of like 104, 105, something like that. Because it can get to, if you get a high enough fever, like it can do brain damage to you.
But he was never forced to defend his IC title.
No, he was not. He did not defend his title. Backstory here on Bret Hart at the time, an interesting story, is that at this time, Bret was having some quiet negotiations with WCW. They were planning to do a Clash of the Champions show the Tuesday after the show, and they were promising a big surprise. And the company was always planning to have Bret drop the IC title here, but I think it might have been accelerated with this fear and this is completely ludicrous, that the WWF would think Bret Hart would take the title and go on to WCW on a live program with the title.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, so they could have done the Albany screw job.
Could have been.
And his career could have gone completely different.
It really could have, yeah.
But that was the deal. Bret Hart, of course, never did go to WCW, but he talks about this in his book, about at least having negotiations with them at the time. He was upset when Ric Flair was brought over and put into a top spot where he felt he was a much better worker. And Bret was having some issues here with the company. But this was always the plan, to get the title to Piper and then do the babyface match at WrestleMania 8 that year. Show kicks off with, hailing from Japan, the Orient Express, who also had their music redubbed because they had the Japanese theme number one on the theme music soundtrack.
What was their original theme?
I want to pull it up here because it's a great, it's great theme music, actually.
Okay.
This was Kato and Pat Tanaka.
Who was Kato? Who played Kato?
Paul Diamond.
Wow.
Who was not Asian and thus needed a mask.
Okay. You know, you can almost tell from their skin color. You know what I mean? Whenever you put a... And their physique as well. I mean, because Asian physiques and Caucasian physiques are a little different. And,
how are they different?
I guess in this case, Kato was way more, defined and just bigger than anybody you would see in Japan, you know, if you know what I mean.
Yes. I wish this was loading. It would have been perfect right there.
Shit.
But we've got a shitty internet connection in here.
Okay.
Anyway, the Orient Express taking on the new... Oh, here we go.
Coming down the aisle from Japan.
I love this theme. I'm thinking of making this my ringtone.
If you,
God knows,
if
I would not even be in the top five of annoying ringtones.
If you do that, please do not answer your phone around me. Because,
What a great promo shot.
Jesus Christ.
This was the old Orient Express.
Okay.
When, this guy would later become Shinja with Hakushi.
Very nice. Well, let's hear the theme song of their opponents, shall we?
Oh, God, their theme was horrible. The New Foundation. The first two words already declared failure.
The New Foundation.
We've got the Heart Foundation, and we'll put him with Bret's younger brother. What can we call them?
It's really only a theme song that can be appreciated with the visual accompaniment of seeing these men in their
in their pajamas, as Bobby Heenan stated.
In their green and yellow checkerboard jumpsuits. Jesus Christ.
There were some horrendous themes back in the day. Just lazy.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I mean, it's I guess it was a status quo back then.
Let's make it sound like something's hitting an anvil. Okay, and what? No, just do that over and over again, and we'll put some guitar riff in the back. Awesome. The New Foundation. These guys are going to be huge. So
man, they look like such goofs. And they get into the ring here, Anvil and Owen, of course. They get into the ring in their... they look like racing cars, both of them. And they're pointing at each other. They just point.
That's my partner. That's my partner. This is my partner, and you're my partner.
Heenan says they must have just got up because they both have their pajamas on. Oh, fuck, he's so good.
Why? Oh, it was like, I get it. Like, Owen Hart is like, he's speed, but Jim Neidhart is not. He's wearing like, he's like fucking hardcore Holly.
Man.
Thurman Sparky listen, Plug Bob Holly.
Listen, this was the early 90s. MC Hammer was still, you know.
You're right. These were
the
MC Hammer pants.
And I don't know, man.
How much drugs did Vince do? Like, to come up with some of this stuff? Or did he just not do enough of them?
I don't know. I think he's just crazy. I don't think you need drugs to necessarily be him.
God damn, you're the Orient Express. You're Asians. You're fast. So we had
Kato.
Kato and you, white guy, put a mask on.
Yeah.
So match starts off. Hammerlock here applied by Owen to Kato, and they announce here that Marty Jannetty has a concussion. And they explain with all that we know about concussions in 1992 that Marty Jannetty cannot compete tonight. And therefore, Haku will replace Marty Jannetty. And Brian Knobbs is also out of the Royal Rumble. And we will have Nikolai Volkov. So you lose Marty Jannetty and Brian Knobbs for Haku and Nikolai Volkov.
Okay.
So a bit of an update there. And that was stemming from the barbershop angle that we'll talk about later.
That's correct. They don't really announce substitutes anymore.
They don't announce people most years.
Yeah, that's true. It's not relevant.
No.
There'll
be some guys. We'll have 30.
What's the problem?
Early on, the new foundation, they work over Pat Tanaka. Owen hits his enziguri to him. Then a cross body by Owen to both heels and then a spinning heel kick to Kato. The referee is taking care of Neidhart as Fuji then hits Owen with his cane. And the Orient Express continues to have the advantage over Owen, who gets a hope spot with a crucifix, gets a two count. Tanaka then goes to pin Owen and is distracted here. Owen eventually tags Neidhart, but the referee doesn't see the tag. Owen then gets Irish whipped into the corner where Fuji has placed his cane and is tossed into the cane. A good spot there with the cane. They work on the left arm of Owen as he remains in there forever. This was like 12 minutes of Owen building to the hot tag for Jim Neidhart, who just, and Smart, probably the best for this match for
perhaps
Owen to be in there without Neidhart. Owen then hits a drop kick with both down, finally makes the hot tag. Huge pop here when Neidhart comes in, and he slingshots into the Orient Express, attacks both of them, and then Neidhart here Irish whips Owen into the ropes, who hits Kato on the floor with a suicide dive, and then they hit their finisher, the rocket launcher, which is a frog splash with Jim Neidhart putting his arms up to make it look like he's hoisting him into the air. This is all Owen. This is the Owen launcher. And Owen pins Pat Tanaka 17 minutes and 19 seconds.
Uh-huh.
This was long.
This was a very long match. A bit too long for my liking. But the finish seemed to go over very well with the crowd, and the match itself was good. It really felt like a showcase match for Owen, who definitely got most of the ring time amongst the four people here.
And I think what this kind of, what they were trying to get at was the prior year's Rumble. It opened up with the Rockers against the Orient Express, and it is one of the best matches in Rumble history. It was and it got a similar amount of time, and I think that's what they were going for here again this year. The same Orient Express team, again, a really solid worker in Owen, and, you know, Neidhart has his strengths as well, but, I didn't think this one hit the level they were probably expecting of the year prior.
No, probably not.
Lord Alfred Hayes has an update on Bret Hart losing the title from the prior Friday with his fever. And then they show a post-match attack where the Mountie is attacking Bret. And then Roddy Piper shows up for the save. And then Mountie attacks Piper from behind with the title. And then Sean Mooney is with the Mountie and Jimmy Hart. And Mooney talks about this shocking development as he looks at the shock stick of the Mountie. Sean Mooney was my kind of announcer. If he saw the pun, he was going all out for it.
God.
Shocking development. And Mountie doesn't feel that Piper deserves a title shot. And then we cut to Gene Okerlund with Roddy Piper. And this was quite the promo. Piper calls Mountie one of the original village people. He throws in a bunch of veiled gay references about the Mountie always getting his man, and says, makes a joke about a wet dream.
Yeah, this absolutely was. I mean, I can't say any of the content in this promo really got me pumped to see this match, but I love Piper's delivery. I loved all the delivery of these guys.
Piper was just a completely different delivery. Mm-hmm. I mean, none of these guys sounded like somebody else for the most part.
Absolutely.
And the Mountie comes out for the match. This guy had tremendous heat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as a heel, I know the plan was just he was just simply a transitional champion for 2 days here. But, man, I think you could have got a lot out of the Mountie here with this character. I mean, he was over as a heel.
Oh, yeah, the shock stick. It was like a legitimate, scary weapon.
Yeah, and then he would graduate to this gigantic shock stick where he, like, mm-hmm. you thought he murdered Sergeant Slaughter on Superstars one week. They threw water on him and then electrocuted him.
Oh, wow.
I thought that was it for Slaughter. They play up Piper having the chance to win two titles today at the Rumble because he has also entered into the Battle Royal. Another kind of sidebar mm-hmm. storyline for the event. Yeah. Mountie tries to leave the ring. Tons of boos here. And Piper goes after him. Hits a bulldog in the ring. Sunset flip attempt by Piper for a two count. Hits an atomic drop. These two were just... like, Piper's offense was not the... most graceful in mm-hmm. the world. Yep. And these two together, it was like two very awkward people having a match together.
Right.
He hits the atomic drop. Mountie goes over the top, but then he skins the cat, runs at Piper, but Piper gets out of the way, and Mountie ends up knocking Jimmy Hart off the apron and then rebounds into Roddy Piper's sleeper hold. They raise the arm three times, and Piper wins the match and the title 5 minutes and 20 seconds. And after the match, he shocks Mountie with his own shock stick. So Piper winning his first title ever in the WWF here.
Mm-hmm. I thought they tried to time a buzz sound effect through the speakers as they...
Yeah, and they did not hit it.
No, they didn't. This was Roddy's, you know, only singles title win ever in the WWE.
But, yeah, he never...
But even at this point, he seemed way more over than the IC title... So for it to mean much, I mean, to me, it just seemed like this was just one part of a bigger story of him trying to go for the world title. But the big celebration for his win, and it was a really nice moment. The match wasn't much of anything, but to see Roddy win a belt was cool.
Lord Alfred Hayes is outside of Hogan's locker room. We knew this because there was a piece of paper on the door that read Hulk. And he goes in, just walks in, and Hogan is like, "Oh, Lord Alfred, what are you doing here?" Mm-hmm. And he comes over, says he won't have any friends in a few minutes during the Royal Rumble, and then tells Hayes to leave.
Is it a Coliseum exclusive?
It was a Coliseum home video exclusive.
Yeah. So you don't have to try that hard.
Oakland is with the Bushwhackers, and their manager, their protege, Jameson, one of the worst wrestling characters.
What was this? Jameson, some Woody Allen ripoff.
Yeah, this was terrible. This guy just had a brief period here where he was paired with the Bushwhackers, and just he was horrendous. Luke says he's never been this excited in his entire life than for this tag match with the Beverly Brothers.
He actually says, "Mean Gene, I've never been excited in all my life."
Oh, that's right. I did write it down as that. And I thought I had written it wrong. No, that is... He's never been excited in his life. I would worry about this man. I was like, maybe let's not worry about wrestling. Let's sit down. Let's talk.
If he's not excited, then what do you call that when he comes out? I hate to see when he's actually excited.
I've seen him excited.
Yes, you felt it on your face.
And then they refer to them as the Beverly Sisters. And they have a surprise. And Jameson wants the genius, who is the manager of the Beverly Brothers. Mm-hmm. And that takes us to what I would call the screeching halt of this show. The Beverly Brothers with the genius against the Bushwhackers with Jameson in their corner. Genius comes out, reads a poem. They cut to a sign that reads, "Bushwhackers are cool."
Thanks for noticing that.
They showed a very fat man doing the Bushwhacker dance.
Uh-huh.
And they come down to the ring. They lick a lot of children.
You know, these parents holding their little babies up for these dudes to lick. Like, how did anybody let them get away with this? Especially in the decade of AIDS. I mean, I personally see...
I know that AIDS can't be contracted from just saliva.
Probably not.
An open wound, maybe. I mean, if they had, like, a cold sore or something, that would be alarming.
Well, in either case, I don't trust it. I don't trust it. I personally seen Bushwhacker Luke take a piss behind a warehouse at an indie show, not wash his hands. And these parents trustless man's saliva on their children's face? Disgusting.
It's, it was 1992. It was a crazy time in life.
Yeah.
Nothing happens in this match for the first 2.5 minutes, and you could argue nothing happened in this match at all. Butch distracts the referee, so the Beverleys end up double-teaming Luke. The fans actually started chanting, "Sissy!" at the heels. Sissy! Wow. Sissy!
Sissy.
Those New York crowds, they can be just merciless.
I know.
Butch bites Bo's ass, and then they clear the ring and do their stomping dance. Blake waits on a knee while Butch looks at the crowd and gets attacked from behind. The Beverleys get tossed into each other, and then the Bushwhackers are on all fours for them to trip over each other, and they clear the ring again. They show Jameson with his shoe taped up, and Monsoon says that you do what you can in these hard times. It's a recession, I guess, in 92. Luke takes his first clothesline bump. It appears, from Blake. This man took the most awkward bump here. The genius walks over at one point and just slaps Jameson. Walks over, slaps him. And Jameson just pouts and asks if his cheek is bleeding. I hated this character. They make the hot tag to Butch. He uses Blake for the battering ram to Bo. Bo then trips Butch from the floor for a 2 count. Then we see a double axe handle by Bo. And Blake pins Luke as Butch is too late to come break the cover. Finish via double axe handle at 14 minutes and 57 seconds.
Ugh.
Holy shit. If ever there was a 3-minute match that should have been its limit, this was it. You could have fit in 3 other matches. I don't care what you had to do. There is no excuse for the Beverly Brothers and the Bushwhackers to go 15 minutes on pay-per-view. This match. This was a horrible, horrible match.
Oh, this match put me to sleep. Very uneventful.
I have no recall of this match being this long. Mm-hmm. I thought this was going to be 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Yeah, well, I guess they're against putting multiple guys out for more than once.
I guess. I would have just done promos.
Sure.
Whatever you have to do, an interview segment. Mm-hmm. Do something. I just hated this match. Bushwhackers attack them afterwards, and they hit the battering ram to both, and then they flip Genius over the top rope, and they hold up the Genius as Jameson winds up to punch him, but then kicks him in the shin, and Genius has to bump for Jameson.
What was all this? What is this guy, Jameson?
I don't know whatever happened to this man. I don't even know who Jameson was, to be honest. Like, he's someone I don't know anything about other than he had this brief run. Let's see what they say about Jameson. And I guarantee WrestleCrap will be the first thing that comes up. Jameson. WWF. I spelled it wrong. Jameson's whereabouts. Revealed. Okay. This is from the Under the Ring blog in the Poughkeepsie Journal. Remember this guy? If you watched the WWF in the late 80s and early 90s, you'd know that it is Bobby the Brain Heenan's biggest nemesis, Jameson. He was a super nerd character who had really disgusting habits and was a huge fan of all the WWE's top faces. Oh my god, they have a current picture of him. Eagle-eyed reader Jamie Girardi found a tidbit on Rick Scalia's online onslaught site that Jameson was played by Andy Kindler, a comedian and native New Yorker who's been appearing on The Late Show with David Letterman in segments, most recently covering the Republican National Convention. Kindler has also done some work with Jon Stewart and Lewis Black and is pretty well regarded as one of the brighter comedic minds in the industry. Here's a look at Andy Kindler's... Wow. Okay, we gotta find this guy now.
That's amazing. He looks like a funny guy. I'd like to see some of his stand-up. I hope it's nothing like
his
character.
Yeah, because the character didn't really lend itself to much.
Yeah.
Andy Kindler, a legit comedian.
Okay.
All right. Well, there you go. We learned something. Gene Okerlund is in the back with the Legion of Doom and says that they will face all challengers and they're not going to start losing tonight to the Natural Disasters. And Hawk says they make them sick. And by the end of tonight, their tongues will be hanging out like dead deers.
Uh-huh.
Those are fighting words.
I really like the look of these promos. I mean, just, you know.
The blue backdrop and the logo.
Yeah, with the flat lighting and the tripoded camera. I'm not saying they necessarily work today, but, like, it's a unique look that feels retro. And I don't know what I liked about it?
It was, I'm tired of the dark back room that we sit, like, there's always, like, this darkness to these backstage segments. And in the early 90s with the WWF, it was bright. It was this blue backdrop, yep. and it came through the screen a lot better, yeah, to me. It was just a colorful backdrop. I was like, Ring of Honor could learn something here.
I have to say the same thing about the way the WWE lights the audience these days with the blue and then the red light on the audience. To me, it's way too stylized and takes away from the live atmosphere. It takes away from, I don't know, the purity of a wrestling crowd. I mean, I watch a show like this, and just to see the crowd as reactive as they are, it just felt like a real sporting event, not so much
not an
theater.
Entertainment event.
Yeah,
that you would. Yeah, I agree. I always. It was like the backstage vignettes. I think that also had something to do with, I mean, you had great promo guys as well on there.
Absolutely.
So that's how we follow up Bushwhackers and Beverly Brothers with the Legion of Doom and the Natural Disasters.
Yes.
Let's see what could possibly happen here.
Jesus.
At this time, the Legion of Doom are the tag team champions defending the belts here. Hawk is in and Typhoon is with him. Hawk cannot get him down until he hits a top rope shoulder block. And Earthquake and Hawk have a stare down, and Earthquake threw a drop kick at Hawk, and he misses, and Monsoon just buries Earthquake for taking this risk. Says, huh, he couldn't have hit Sky Lolo with that. What a just burial here of this heel. But he didn't call him a nerd, which is good.
You can't do that, no.
Animal goes for a slam, but Earthquake lands on top of him. Natural Disasters work over Hawk. Big bear hug by Typhoon. Earthquake comes in and just steps on Hawk. Just puts all his weight onto his sternum. Mm-hmm. I like that spot. Misses a splash in the corner, and Hawk gets him off of his feet and makes the hot tag to Animal. Animal then hits a double clothesline that knocks both men down to the floor. And then the Road Warriors, Legion of Doom, go to the floor and brawl with them. And they're going up the aisle. Typhoon runs in at the count of 9, and the Natural Disasters get the win by count out at 9 minutes and 23 seconds. And then the Disasters grab the tag titles, but LOD come in, attack them with a chair, and take their titles back.
This is another really hard one for me to watch. I mean, I was already pretty, really tired thanks to the previous match, and this was just even, it made things even harder. And then a non-finish to a lame nothing match.
Andy Kindler was on Everybody Loves Raymond.
As what? As who?
I don't know. I never watched the show, and I don't have it. Anyway, interesting. I'm learning all about Andy Kindler here. I know the name. I've heard the name Andy Kindler before. Never knew that was Jameson.
Interesting.
Then we got promo after promo after promo. Sean Mooney is in the back and gets Jimmy Hart and the Natural Disasters walking in. Jimmy is just outraged here, says that they should be the champions. He's calling his lawyer, and then Earthquake and Typhoon come in, and we talk about the stereotypical angry heel monster promo. This was it. Two large men out of breath yelling.
We got the titles!
I can't believe
it! What happened? How come they were taken away?
Well, you know, you have to. It must be a pinfall.
Millions of people see what happened there. We're the champions. We're the WWE Tag Team Champions.
We beat them third and square. They were cut out of the ring. We had our hands held high. We're the champions.
You don't see our attorneys. We're going to put up with this stuff. We kicked their butts. And look what happens. They pull it away from us. It ain't going to happen.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. There's something funny about this, though. It's just hilarious seeing these sweaty, obese dudes.
That's what it sounded like. John Tenta was like, he just wanted to go to the showers, and he had to cut this promo.
We won those tag titles! And we're covered!
Hey, you put in adrenaline to these men's bodies.
Oh, God, man.
On top of everything
They were
else.
Getting red. Like, Earthquake was getting red here during this promo.
I thought it was great. You know what? I'm doing some research on Andy Kindler, and I don't know
Hold on a second.
I'm going to try very hard to get Andy Kindler on this show.
Yeah, because I'm actually looking at something with Andy Kindler, and something tells me...
Forget Ric Flair. The 92 Rumble is going to be the Andy Kindler Royal Rumble.
Perhaps Andy Kindler wasn't the person who portrayed Jameson.
What? They look similar enough.
Well, here's another
late
article.
Breaking news here.
Here's another article. An interview with Jameson, Part 1, by Phil Strum. Note from Phil. So I finally found him. I located former World Wrestling Federation character Jameson, whose real name is John DiGiacomo.
Oh!
He's 52, lives in Rockland County, and commutes to New York City, where he's the events manager at the Underground Lounge, a popular comedy and music club in New York. He's doing some stand-up comedy and acting, as well as other jobs since leaving the WWF. I'm looking on getting a photo of John so you can see what he looks like, but I haven't one yet. Okay, there's some controversy here.
Who is Jameson?
Who is the real Jameson?
And then there's another. Ask Luke next time we see him.
Now, Andy Kindler himself has a blog, and he writes something. Here we go. There's so much not going on in my career that I don't know where to stop. But that's not what this is about. You don't come to this website for career updates. These are the words of Andy Kindler. You don't come here at all unless you were looking for the professional wrestling guy who has the same name as me and stumbled here by mistake. I wish I was the other Andy Kindler. Oh, wait a minute. This is a different Andy Kindler.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, anyway, I don't know. There's some real controversy there. Andy Kindler himself has a Wikipedia, and under that it says, Kindler is often thought to have portrayed the character of Jameson in the WWF, but the character was portrayed by a different actor by the name of John DiGiacomo. So
that sounds like it would be...
I don't know. Do we trust? Who do we trust here?
Only one way to find out. We can have them both on the show.
Ah, okay.
Say we...
Do your best impression of...
Maybe Andy Kindler just, like, one day he just was joking. Like, yeah, I was Jameson. When someone asked him. And now the rumors just spread.
That's a brilliant thing. You could tell people that you were once a contestant on Tough Enough.
Do you remember when you were, like, in, like, elementary school of, like... rumors that would go around amongst your friends and stuff that were like, this was like pre-internet, so we had no database for fact checking. I remember when I was like in grade school, whenever people would talk about Saved by the Bell, someone would always say, yeah, Zach Morris is dead, he died in a car accident. And someone said it, and then another person repeated it, and then everyone just assumed it was true. Any crazy rumors that you grew up and then you found out the opposite was true?
I'm trying to think of some, but I'm sure it's happened. Kids are weird. Kids hear something and they treat it as fact, but I can't think of one right now. Something to do with wrestling, like maybe
the one always the Ultimate Warrior being dead.
Oh, a lot of my friends actually. This was probably when we were like, I don't know, 9. One of my friends was like, Sid was in a porno. Sid used to be a porn actor.
What?
That was a rumor.
Oh, that one, man.
Yeah.
You could just call the porno Sid Justice.
Yeah, why not? Or Sid Vicious or any of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of the rumors.
I don't know. I'm trying to come up with... I'm usually pretty quick with witty porn titles, but it's tough with Sid. Speaking of Sid, he would be coming up here with one of his classic promos. Okerlund is with Piper, and he says, only in America. And he says he's now going to win the WWF title because I got a dream. And dedicates this title to his son, Colby, who is now an MMA fighter.
Oh, okay.
So his son has not won a title yet either, so maybe father and son will one day be champions in competing industries.
Perhaps, yes.
Then we go to Sean Mooney back in the locker room. Sean Mooney's another guy I would love to track down.
Mm-hmm.
I like the obscure people.
Oh, yeah, me too.
He's in the locker room as he's just talking, and Barbarian just walks by him, just randomly. And then talks about there's a lot of favorites in the Royal Rumble, and there's also some underdogs. Pan over to Shawn Michaels in complete new gimmick. This is the first time anyone had seen him in this whole leather outfit. And let's be honest, if you just went from seeing rocker Shawn Michaels for years, I think you would have laughed at this what is this?
Perhaps, yeah.
Even in 92, I mean, this was pretty...
The rocker.
And it turned out to be an excellent, excellent gimmick for the guy. But anytime you see a gigantic shift in a guy's gimmick,
yeah,
it's jarring at first.
Absolutely. But I think it's completely great and works for the character.
Like
change.
Right, that with a heart, with a red line through it.
Yeah.
He's the heartbreak kid.
See, even at that point, he was already the heartbreak kid.
I don't love...
I find it very interesting. I mean, these days, it's you don't often see... I mean, look at Mark Henry. He's still wearing the WSM singlet.
World's right? Strongest Mark. From there, he basically just... they recap the Rockers' breakup angle on the barbershop. And this was one of the great, great angles in WWF history.
Mm-hmm.
This is... I've said this before. This was the first time I ever watched wrestling. This was on the first Superstars, whether it was live or it was a recap of the angle. I remember watching that and was just blown away.
That's amazing.
Marty Jannetty going through a window. And once again, Bobby Heenan was just fantastic in that in that angle. And Sean says that he saved Marty 29 other beatings. Then Lord Alfred Hayes is another Coliseum Video exclusive. Is with Ric Flair. And he says, Rick, what number did you draw? And Rick just nonchalantly says, well, Alfred, I drew number 3.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes no difference to me. I am going to go out there and I am going to eliminate 29 other men and become the WWF champion.
See, like, he's not acting like a heel here. In fact, he's acting like a, you know,
underdog
babyface. He's a man who just acts extremely confident and determined. And it worked for him either way.
Then they cut to Gene Okerlund, who plugs WrestleMania 8 and how the winner will face... the winner will be the WWF champion and then go on to defend the title at WrestleMania 8. And then they throw to the sets of interviews that they used to do before every Rumble, where they'd have some of the key guys cut promos. Great. It's like, this takes no time, and it just... The last thing you want to do is go into the Rumble and you just... Oh, so-and-so's going to win. It's a foregone conclusion. You throw out 6 guys who make their arguments, and then in the back of your head, you're like, well, it could go this way. Maybe they'll go this way.
Yep.
You want to leave that element of surprise.
To mention, it's a great way to build identity for some of your lesser-known guys.
Absolutely. And that's why I enjoyed even having like a guy like the Repo Man in this. Mm-hmm. They start off with Randy Savage and says he's going back to the top of the mountain, and he also wants to get his hands on Jake Roberts, who the two were having a huge feud at the time. And then an extreme close-up shot of Sid Justice as they zoom out, and he did his classic, my teeth will not separate as I talk, because I'm winning the Rumble.
See, it is this simple. The man who is standing last in the Royal Rumble will be the World Wrestling Federation champion. So all I ask you to do is open your eyes. It will hit you in the head like a shot. For you are looking at the man that is superior to all. You are looking at the next World Wrestling Federation champion. You are looking at Sid Justice.
What an awkward promo the guy was, but I was always...
Hey, but he was unique,
I was a Sid
right?
fan. I always loved Sid when I was a
He's
kid.
He's so different and... almost comically intense.
Yes. I'm surprised. Like, the Ultimate Warrior had, like, this rebirth because of YouTube.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised Sid hasn't gotten the same kind of treatment because he was this ridiculously intense muscle head.
Yeah.
And he was just, like, he totally lends himself to, like, the YouTube culture of fucking with his promos I think I'm surprised Sid is just he's one of those names that's just always fallen under the radar. He never comes back for any WWF reunion shows or ever gets mentioned in any kind of.
I don't think there's too much demand.
He was a hokey character that I enjoyed a lot. I mean, the guy was a champion at one point. It's not like he was just a bit player in the early 90s.
No, I mean, but they always strapped the rock to him, but I never saw it for me. It was just a combination of the over-the-top nature of his character and also the blonde, curly mullet.
And the terrible wrestler.
Yeah,
I mean, he was the prototype of we can get a guy over based on size.
Mm-hmm.
From there, they go to the repo man. He says, I like to take things, and I'm going to take the biggest prize of them all today. And he says, what's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine, too. And they go to the British Bulldog, who puts over how he won a 20-man battle royal at Royal Albert Hall in England the prior year. Jake Roberts, a great promo here, talks about what he wants and what he needs. And he's going to save enough to go after Randy Savage later in the day. Mm. We get Ric Flair with Mr. Perfect, who everyone talks about the post-match interview with Flair. He had a great pre-match promo here with Perfect.
You're looking at the next World Wrestling Federation champion. You're looking at the man who rocks the cradle.
Mirror, mirror on the wall! Today we find out who's the fastest of them all! We're at the Royal Rumble, and 30 of the greatest World Wrestling Federation superstars gathered today to find out who is the man. For 4 months, I've called myself the real world champion. So for me, there's no back door. But remember, boys, and that's to all 29 of you, I've lived one way and one way only, and that's with the belief to be the man, you have to beat the man. And today, at the Royal Rumble, I am the man. Woo!
Who introduces Ric Flair as the man who rocks the cradle. And a great promo from Flair. The Undertaker and Paul Bearer speak. And Hulk Hogan, who ends his promo by rolling the R's on Rumble.
Hmm. Yeah.
Good promo from Hogan. And then we start off the Rumble. Howard Finkel goes over the rules. He's going on and on about the rules, and Monsoon just talks over him. He just says, it's real simple. Over the top and you're out. And they welcome Jack Tunney, who gets booed. And he reiterates exactly what was said. The winner gets the title. You think John Laurinaitis is awkward? Jack Tunney was way more awkward.
He was so bad.
I never remember him being a terrible character, but he was. He was horrible.
No, but he wasn't terrible, though, because he seemed real. He didn't have a character. He didn't need one. He seemed like a legitimate president of a company. Just this old dude who's not an actor.
That he was not. He will never be accused of being an actor. Jack Tunney. So the Rumble starts off. Number one is the British Bulldog, and number two, Ted DiBiase. And they have a basic wrestling match to start, with DiBiase having the advantage. And they mention right off the bat of Rick Martel holding the record from the prior year, lasting over 53 minutes, and that Bushwhacker Luke has the shortest record at just over 4 seconds. And Bulldog clotheslines DiBiase over the top rope. DiBiase, a short night for him, basically in this for about a minute. And then number three, Ric Flair comes out, and Heenan is just livid here that his guy, he's pretty much given up. He's like, oh, he's fucked.
This was a classic moment because there's that Coliseum Home Video exclusive, the audience, live audience watching this, didn't know that Flair was going to be number three. So this is like the moment that's always shown in highlight reels, that long zoom down the hallway as Flair walks out. And
I love that shot they did. Did it for a brief period of time in the early 90s where it was, the zoom up the aisle.
Yeah.
And it was one of those shots that just made your guys look like superstars.
Yeah,
you know, I hate that term, but that you make them look larger than life here just with that shot.
No, it's beautiful. It made the entrance seem like so long, and maybe this was a longer entrance, which I think works for the Rumble because it draws out the reaction of each entrant. But you know, at this point, Flair comes out as number three. The entire arena,
tons of heat,
is laughing at this guy, thinking he has no chance, and it all just like works to tell the great story that it eventually was told.
Flair bumps around for Bulldog as he would for just about every. I think by the end of this, aside from Ted DiBiase, I think Ric Flair worked with every single guy in this match and bumped for them. Number four was Jerry Sags, who did not have a monumental entrance.
No, he did not. No.
He got the split screen and then the cutaway when he didn't get there fast enough. They double-team Bulldog as Heenan is just shouting advice at Ric Flair, and Sags gets tossed over the top but hops back to the apron, poses to the crowd, and is drop-kicked to the floor by Bulldog. Thanks for coming out, Jerry Sags.
Huge babyface rub for Bulldog early on in this match.
And Bulldog is the perfect example that, you know, every year you have that storyline of the guy who just gets over by lasting longer than people expect him to. I mean, mm-hmm. Bulldog was in this for a significant period of time, and every year they pick somebody to just kind of last for a long time, and it just puts emphasis on someone. It's just they don't have to win the Rumble, just lasting a significant period of time where, wow, that person's still in the Rumble is a rub in and of itself.
One of the reasons why I think the Rumble is such a brilliant match is because you can have it can benefit so many different people.
You can do so much in the Rumble. You can set up stuff for Mania. Mm-hmm. You can get guys over that typically don't get a lot of time on TV every year. Mm-hmm. There's so many little stories you can tell in a 60-minute match with 30 guys. Yep. Number five out was Haku, who comes in, attacks Bulldog, and then goes for Flair. And Bulldog dumps him over right as the buzzer is ending for the next entrant. And that is Shawn Michaels who comes in. And Shawn Michaels was kind of in that role in this year where the focus was Flair. But they certainly wanted to get Michaels over as this new heel who lasts quite a while.
And tons of heat for his own entrance, too.
Yeah.
That's the other great thing about the Rumble is to see the reactions of the different people as they come out. Everybody, like, you can really gauge how popular every character is simply from their entrance. And Michaels was definitely in the thick of his singles push here.
Yeah, so, you know, a rare combination that you didn't get to see too much out of here. But, I mean, Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair doing some spots together here in 92.
Interacting with Flair. It's always fun to go back and watch these shows and see where these people were at their time in comparison to where they would eventually be with, you know, Michaels retiring Flair.
And Michaels did a bunch of kind of like near elimination spots and kind of introducing that part. Heenan says that Flair, this was funny. I was timing this match and it was always comical as Monsoon and Heenan would just, the worst one of where they're referring to times and they were just off at times. Heenan says, Monsoon says, Flair has been in there over 10 minutes. And Heenan says, well, that means Bulldog's got to have been in there over 20. This was at the 9-minute and 45-second mark. And, I mean, Bulldog started the match, and Flair was in third. So Heenan's math here, 10 minutes apart.
Listen, you don't need a math degree to work in pro wrestling.
No, you really don't.
No.
And Tito Santana was out seventh, and the story they played up was just every new guy was just going for Flair here.
Mm-hmm.
Barbarian was out number eight, and Heenan notes, you have the ability to become a millionaire in one afternoon today. Texas Tornado was out number nine, and he came in and got a strong reaction here and was paired off with Flair, which mm-hmm. for world-class fans, I mean, a legendary match from 1984. But this was definitely a toned-down version here. He was simply the Texas Tornado and not the high point of his career.
No.
We saw a discus punch to Michaels, who just bumped his ass off here for Kerry Von Erich. And Michaels was a guy growing up watching World Class and being there in Texas. I mean, probably just one of the first times you would imagine he was even in the ring with Von Erich.
That's really cool.
Repo Man was out 10th. 11 was Greg Valentine, who they note was lasted over 44 minutes in the Rumble the prior year. I liked how they brought up, you know, past Rumble, you know, times, just kind of putting over guys' performances. I mean, Greg Valentine really meant little here, but you put that little tidbit of information in.
Totally.
It's just something
it makes
that
it,
gives
it,
Valentine a storyline.
Exactly. It makes him stand out. And in a match with 30 people, I think...
And if you get it over, I mean, it means something when someone eliminates Greg Valentine, hopefully. Nikolai Volkov was out number 12.
Monsoon says, things aren't really great for the Russians right now.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe Nikolai Volkov can redeem.
Win it for Russia in these hard times.
Mm-hmm.
Valentine puts the figure four onto Flair, and this crowd responded huge to this.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Valentine putting the figure four on Ric Flair, but this was right as Volkov got dumped out at the same time. Big Boss Man was out 13th, and Repo Man here tosses out Greg Valentine, so There kind of goes my theory. I don't think Repo Man really got much from eliminating Greg Valentine. And then Boss Man tosses out the Bulldog, and Flair comes up from behind, dumps out Bulldog, and then Von Erich. And Michaels and Santana here manage to eliminate each other, leaving... then Hercules comes out 14th, and Flair high-fives Barbarian and then attacks him. And we've got Hercules, who eliminates the Barbarian. Then Big Boss Man eliminates Hercules. And then it's Ric Flair and the Big Boss Man. And do you want to describe this elimination?
Well, okay. Flair was, first of all, every time you have a babyface who is alone with a major heel threat, Boss Man here was pretty much put into the role of a bulldog, you know, a guy who's simply elevated because the focus is on him, and he could be the guy that could, you know, eliminate the major heel threat in Ric Flair. So, Boss Man getting a bit of a rub, but his elimination, though, it was basically Flair was against the ropes, Boss Man ran to attempt a clothesline, Flair ducks, and Boss Man just...
lands on the top rope.
Yeah.
And has to eliminate himself.
Yeah, clumsily... maneuvers himself out of the ring.
Not a great elimination.
No, not great.
But this spot I enjoyed. Flair is all by himself. Heenan is celebrating, thinking that Flair's won the title. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. And then number 15, Roddy Piper runs out. Huge pop here. The guy's just won the IC title. He had the feud ongoing with Ric Flair at this point from TV. And Piper just attacks him. Flair goes to the floor where Piper follows him, eventually hits an airplane spin onto Flair. The crowd was loving this. Jake Roberts was out 16th. He just comes in and sits down and watches Piper holding a sleeper onto Ric Flair, and then he breaks it up. And Roberts turns on Flair, hits a short clothesline, and Flair gets the figure four onto Roberts and then takes a bunch of stomps from Piper.
And Jake was working a program right now at this point with Savage, right?
With Savage, yeah. Jim Duggan was out 17th. IRS was out 18th, who comes in and... these spots never made any sense to me. Flair is... Duggan was trying to eliminate Flair, and IRS comes in and stops Duggan. I mean, logically, why are you stopping anyone from eliminating anybody? Makes no sense to me.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make sense.
Jimmy Snuka, out number 19.
Who's booed?
I think that was more the that chant that Snuka would always do. Where he would... because it sounds like a boo, but I think it was a chant that Snuka would always kind of do in his promos. But Snuka, I mean, looking old here in 92, and here he is 20 years later, still doing the odd indie here and there. Mm-hmm. Not a happy story in wrestling is Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah, he loves it.
But he at least has a... I've told that story before. He wanted $2 for an autograph.
Oh, wow.
Disgusted. Huh. Number 20 was The Undertaker, who is obviously getting a huge push at this point. Had won the WWF title briefly about a month prior. He just eliminates Snuka right away with a clothesline, and then Flair goes after him. Monsoon says that Flair has been in there over 32 minutes. This was when he undersold it. He said 32 minutes, and Flair had been in there 36 at this point. Stopwatches, they're awesome. Very underrated. And basic math. Randy Savage was number 21, who just sprints in going for Jake Roberts, who bails out of the ring. And Savage gets in and gets attacked by The Undertaker. And then Roberts, the heel, just comes in when Savage has been attacked and goes after Savage. And this leads to... oh, this was a bit of a clusterfuck here. Roberts takes a knee to the back and is eliminated by Randy Savage, who then catapults himself over the top rope to the floor. And Monsoon and Heenan are saying he's eliminated. But Undertaker throws him back in, and then they rule... I don't know if they got this in their earpiece, that Savage just fucked up, but Savage is not eliminated. Yeah, he's still in.
It was very silly. It was very...
this was Mil Máscaras-level idiocy in the Rumble.
This was Great Khali-level idiocy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not a good spot here. Savage still part of the Rumble, and just, why would you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Just not thinking. Savage and Roberts fight in the aisle, and Heenan says since no one threw out Savage, that means he's still in the match, which is a rule they have since forgotten. And they let Savage stay in. The Berserker was out, number 22, followed by Virgil and Colonel Mustafa. There's a murderer's row of entrants. Mm-hmm. Colonel Mustafa and General Adnan come out. They're doing the Bushwhackers entrance with the march. Mm-hmm. Rick Martel was out 25th, and they played up how he holds the record at over 54 minutes. And Savage eliminates Mustafa. Martel is going after Ric Flair. And then this made total logical sense. He's going after the guy who's trying to threaten his record. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. And 26th was Hulk Hogan. Huge pop for Hogan. And then Hogan comes in, hits a big clothesline, eliminates The Undertaker right away. Back body drops the Berserker out and then tears off his shirt. And then Duggan and Virgil eliminate each other. They followed up Hogan with the Icon Skinner, who's out 27th. No reaction for Skinner. Mm. 28th was Sergeant Slaughter, and Martel eliminates Skinner from behind during that entrance. Sid Justice was 29th. And then number 30, they're doing the countdown, and Monsoon, what a troll here. As they're counting down, no surprise who this is going to be, and at like the 2-second mark, it's the Warlord coming out, and Heenan's like, you never know. And the Warlord comes out, and Monsoon's like, who else was it going to be? It could only be one guy. Uh-huh. Like, way to just kill any drama here of who the last guy is going to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had...
They did this a lot of years with the 30th entrant. I always hated it when I was a kid. It's like, you're guessing who the 30th guy is going to be, and they just...
But you know who the participants are going to be already.
You don't know all the 30 off the top of your head, and could be... I just... Why give it away like that?
I don't think they ruined
whatever.
Anything.
Not a big deal. We always fail to give out this award, but I am giving the Scott Putzke Award to the Warlord.
Sir?
Holy shit.
Hey, a lot of candidates on this show.
There were a lot of candidates on this show. Believe
you,
me. Sid, Barbarian.
Bulldog.
Lots of guys on this show, but Warlord was at another level.
Well, congratulations.
The Warlord. Hogan and Flair are on the floor and gives a vertical suplex to Flair. Justice throws Slaughter. He just throws this man into the turnbuckle, and Slaughter takes a bump into the top turnbuckle and over to the ground. I thought he was dead. Mm-hmm. What a vicious elimination here. Slaughter just bumped his ass off here for Sid. And he goes out. Piper eliminates IRS. Hogan and Sid dump out Warlord together. And then Sid dumps out Piper and Martel together as they're fighting against the ropes. So our final four are Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Sid, and Randy Savage. Savage is eliminated after Ric Flair hits a knee to Sid in the corner, and this knocks out Savage, who is fighting with Sid. And then Hogan has Flair on the apron. They're fighting against the ropes, and Sid comes from behind, tosses Hogan out, and Hogan is just pissed here. Pissed that this man abided by the rules and eliminated him fairly. I mean, what sympathy did anyone have for Hulk Hogan here? So then Hogan here grabs the arm of Sid and is holding on to it as Flair comes from behind, dumps Sid over, and Flair wins. We get the great call from Bobby Heenan proclaiming Ric Flair the new World Wrestling Federation champion. But the focus was more Hogan and Sid here having this stare down, and there were chants of Sid from the crowd. They were, and the way this was booked, I mean, Hogan was getting some boos at this time period. I think people were kind of tired of him. And man, you talk about booking a scenario where Hogan to me comes across as the bitter. Poor sport here.
Well, I know you watched the Coliseum home video version, John, but on the original live broadcast, the fans actually cheered this, and they had to re-edit it for the home video.
Oh, really?
If you go on YouTube, actually, we'll put a link up on our Facebook group. Somebody put a side-by-side comparison.
Oh.
The fans initially cheered, and Monsoon made the call about how, you know, all's fair for such and such. But then on the edited version, Vince had Monsoon and Heenan recall the entire finish, and they redubbed boos to make Sid look more like a coward for pushing Hogan over.
Well, they certainly... It didn't come across like that at all.
Absolutely not. No, you could look at the crowd during this reaction. Everybody was cheering, and I guess everybody was kind of sick of Hogan by this point.
Yeah, and I mean, Hogan had won the Rumble the prior 2 years. I think they wanted someone fresh. Mm-hmm. They, a fifth Hogan title run at that point. I don't think anyone wanted that. They have the stare down, and Sid ends it by just yelling, "I'll kill you," which could have been the promo spot for WrestleMania right there. And what was funny here, Way, was that you watch this and you totally get the impression Hogan and Sid at WrestleMania,
yeah.
which is what they did. But the original plan was Flair and Hogan, and they sent out the promotional material and then changed their mind. This was a match that they were going to do way down the line.
So then why do this stuff with Hogan and Sid? When were they planning on putting this match together?
I don't know what the plan was, if it was significantly down the road, but they were going to have Hogan take the time off after WrestleMania. And as it turned out, Sid actually got, you know, popped for a drug test and actually left the company after WrestleMania as well. But you totally had that sense, because you also did Flair and Savage, and there was nothing in this match to build to that at all. I mean, Savage was kind of an afterthought.
Absolutely, and the feud eventually would be built on the pictures of Liz, and none of that was revealed here.
Yeah. So that is how the arena portion ended, and then we go to the back where Okerlund is with Jack Tunney, who presents the title to Ric Flair along with Mr. Perfect and Bobby Heenan. Flair cuts that awesome promo about with a tear in my eye.
Jesus.
Saying, this is the only title in the world that makes you number one. And when you are the king of the WWF, you rule the world. And then he yells, I love it! Which you could see Larry Sweeney would use that, clear the influence here from Ric Flair. And then they end the show with a photo montage. So the Rumble, awesome. Undercard, not holding up at all for me. So
a very weak
I'm kind of torn by this show. There was a great second half and a terrible first half to this show. But Flair, Heenan, a lot of great stuff in that Rumble, so I can't give this a failing grade by any stretch. Give this I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10.
I give it an 8 out of 10 simply because I feel the moment of Flair winning is just so iconic, and the Rumble match itself was really good.
What you bought the show for delivered. I mean, no one was ordering this for the undercard.
Absolutely, and that... Listen, even if you ever have the urge to look back at the Rumbles, if you watch just the last 30 minutes of this show alone, you'd have a very satisfying experience, because that Flair promo backstage after he wins, like, to me, one of the best post-championship victory promos, not just in wrestling, but in athletics. I mean, how many iconic championship victory speeches can you remember as vividly as this one? You know, just his delivery, his face is just so full of real emotion. The difference between, I find, Flair's championship win and a lot of other, you know, first-time championship wins for people is that, even though winning a wrestling title is a predetermined decision, going out there and wrestling a match for 60 minutes is a legitimate physical feat for any athlete. So it felt incredibly real, and I don't know if there's a better way for a man to win a title than something like that.
So a fantastic Royal Rumble match in 92, and not surprisingly, tons of feedback we got for this show, and we will head into that right now. And let's start off with Aaron Xavier. Being a huge fan of Ric Flair at the time, I remember this being a cool moment in the WWF, such a cool concept at the time to have the winner of the Rumble win the title. Of course, it was never the greatest of title reigns for Flair, but it was still amazing to see him with the championship. The only other thing I remember from this show was Mountie and Piper being decent. Well, they kept it short. Crowd was into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to Zach Volk. I was never a Hogan fan, even as a kid. Even at 10 years old, I wondered why, when he got eliminated, it was cheap and he had to get re-involved in the match. He seemed like a sore loser. The Brain was on fire on commentary, and Flair cut my all-time favorite promo after the win.
Brad Ward writes, Orient Express versus New Foundation was a hell of a tag match and very entertaining, with this pay-per-view tag team wrestling really shine through, especially since 75% of the talent was involved in the Royal Rumble match. Mountie and Piper is pretty good, but not as good as a world title match we'd get on top. The idea of having the WWF title on the line at a Rumble was very compelling to me. I liked how they used the Rumble to build Hogan and Sid. Having Hogan screw Sid kept Sid hot, even though he got eliminated from the Rumble match. Flair was great and looked very dominating, and the story being told that he was WCW champion and left and went to another company and won their title was great. Also very memorable is they did an interview with Mean Gene and Flair, saying one of the most iconic sayings in history, with a tear in my eye, this is the greatest moment of my life. It made the title feel like a big deal, definitely in my top five Rumbles.
Josh Kachenko, I have fond memories of this event because it is the first Rumble I actually got to watch live on pay-per-view. I'm not sure if I like or dislike Brain's commentary.
Not much to say about the undercard, but for the Rumble itself, I don't understand the booking. Flair, the heel, is totally babyfaced by his performance. At the end, Sid does nothing but try to win the match, and Hogan pulls a dick heel move by crying like a child and starts pulling him out. But by Mania, Hogan is the babyface in the terrible main event, and Flair is the heel champion with pictures of a naked Liz. I also like how in back-to-back sentences, Gorilla called Volkov a Lithuanian and a Russian.
That's one of those countries. Alexander Rios, one of the most memorable Rumbles of all time. Unique that the Rumble match itself was for the WWE Championship and not for a spot at WrestleMania. Nevertheless, it has its place in history. Ric Flair was the perfect guy to win. To WWF fans at the time, he was a fresh face and very worthy of being champion, and his post-match interview has been replayed so many times, I'll always remember it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but if Ric Flair came into the WWF as the real world champion, why would he be so thrilled to win Hogan's kiddie Toys R Us belt? Maybe I'm remembering this wrong, but any insights would be greatly appreciated. I'd give this Rumble an 8 out of 10, minus 1 point for Hogan being on the card, already included in my score.
Well, it's his job to put over the belt that that he's currently holding.
Yeah, that was the whole deal. The guy came in proclaiming, I am the real world's champion, and I'm going to go into this match, and I'm going to beat all of your guys and prove that I am this champion of the real world's champion. And it was a heel line, and he backed it up and won it. So yeah, I thought it was great.
And it also buries your competition. So why not?
And I'm sure they were more than happy to do that promo afterwards.
Yep. Josh Moores, I went back and watched this Rumble, and I forgot how much Bobby Heenan sold this Rumble. There was actually stories within this match, such as Jake and Macho Man, as well as no one wanting Flair to win. It even had something that they should really bring back. And that's the wrestlers getting the 1 to 2 minutes saying, I'm winning the Rumble, this means so much to me, the Rumble has meaning to me. Even if it's brief moments peppered throughout the weeks to the Rumble or on the show itself, as it were here. It made me feel like people like the British Bulldog would win or that Flair would win. Also, I know this is probably a no on every front, but would there ever be a time to review the 2004 Rumble? Outside of the obvious, I actually like this pay-per-view, but to each their own, right?
I'm just gonna say I really just am not interested in reviewing the 2004 Rumble. Listen, I know that there are people out there who are just, well, why not? It's part of history and stuff. I just I've said it many, many times in regards to Chris Benoit. You know, we'll review events where he happens to have a match on the show, but there's more than enough stuff to review, and I'm just not interested in going back and watching it at all. I have zero interest. So that's me. Over to Nathan Hamilton. Everyone has mentioned how great Heenan was on commentary, and that was especially true for me since it was all I had to go on. I was 12, and my parents wouldn't shell out the money for pay-per-views, so I was watching/listening on Scramble Vision. Since I grew up in Atlanta in the Carolinas, I knew that Ric Flair was the man and the real world champion. I was excited as hell to see him in the WWE. I remember the brain yelling, damn it, when Flair came out third, and being shocked because you never heard anyone curse on WWF TV at the time. Bobby and Gorilla told me the story since I couldn't see it. Heenan's desperation when it looked like Flair was on the ropes kept me riveted. When he went apeshit over Flair winning, so did I. It wasn't until years later when the WWE released their first Flair DVD collection that I actually saw this Rumble, and it was just as good as it sounded. In my opinion, the best Rumble of all time.
Fond memories. And more from Ryan Fried. This is one of the first pay-per-views I ever ordered, and this is my favorite Rumble. I remember watching the Superstars leading into the Rumble featuring the infamous barbershop angle with the Rockers. To this day, I still feel that it is the greatest tag team breakup of all time. Maybe part of it is nostalgia, but I feel like the 91-92 period gets a lot of flack, as it was the start of the downturn for the company business-wise. However, it had some classic angles like the first single runs of Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart, Jake Roberts attacking Randy Savage with his King Cobra, and slapping Elizabeth. Flair doing awesome work with Piper, Savage and Hogan, and The Undertaker getting a monster push and even beating Hogan. Loved this whole show. Heenan's commentary really made the event for me an 8 out of 10.
We go over to G. Hall. Before we all knew who Flair would actually face for real at WrestleMania, he did the unthinkable. Number 3. First real long-time entrant to win, but I do remember it because I'm old. After watching, the programs were not solidified, but they were fairly developed, that in hindsight... we didn't get our Flair Hogan WrestleMania showdown. Explain that to a 14-year-old, because that was my reaction. It was a great Rumble match and easily the best Rumble match at the time and years to come. Well, the main reasoning behind it is that when Flair first came over, him and Hogan did a whole house show run together, and it really didn't draw as people thought. I mean, for many, that was the dream match of the two guys of the 80s mm-hmm. finally facing each other, and it didn't connect with people. And it was, you know, it was a house show run. It was kind of a small sample size of would there be national interest for this. But on top of that, with the whole steroid scandal that was coming out, they wanted Hogan to take time off after WrestleMania. So it really didn't make sense to put him in a match where he loses to Ric Flair. They didn't want to do that. So for all intents and purposes, it made more sense to flip the card around. I think they didn't have a lot of confidence in Flair and Hogan having as much interest as Hogan and Sid. So they changed it, and that was kind of the story behind that. There were a lot of different factors going into that decision.
Darren Litchfield, this was the first VHS pay-per-view I ever owned. Seeing that I was an only child, I spent a considerable amount of time, aged 8, watching this tape while performing matches with a 4-foot-tall stuffed teddy bear. I mainly concentrated on selling for the bear for most of my matches before my typical comeback, but one time my mother walked in before the finish and caught me taking bumps and hit the rumble tape to ensure my safety. This trauma only served to increase my love of pro wrestling, and the rest was fanboy history. I'm now 26 and have way too much time spent or wasted on the spandex sport. Thanks, Mom. I still can't get through the intro of All the Superstars without simultaneously laughing at its hokiness and developing a sentimental tear in my eye. I remember not really getting Flair at that age, as I was all about the red and yellow, but I did develop a distrust of shaking people's hands for a few months after the Sid and Hulk incident. This was too close to my heart and etched into my brain to rate impartially, but I would have to give it a modest rating of totally fucking awesome.
Shy Avigan. Gorilla and Heenan on commentary. What more can you ask for? MVP of the night besides Flair had to be Heenan, who managed his man from the commentary booth. So we started the second year in a row of Orient Express stellar opener. Really underrated tag team. As great as the pairing with the new Hart Foundation, pajamas and all, was, then came an awful combination with the Bushwhackers and the Beverly Brothers. The only thing I enjoyed about this match was Jameson. Yeah, he was a little over the top, but stuff like Am I Bleeding, just when the camera's right there, really put a smile on my face. Even the tag team title match was decent. I really enjoyed how they built up Piper having the chance to walk out with two titles. We'll skip down. He has more here on Jameson. I remember seeing this guy, and therefore I Google searched and found an interview with the guy named John DiGiacomo, who was short on money and thought about giving stand-up a shot. Vince discovered him playing the Jameson character in a murder mystery audience participation show as part of a friend's birthday party in the late 80s. DiGiacomo got the call from Stanford and was told to come in as the character, that Bobby Heenan is going to be there, and don't let in that he's an actor. In the conference room, DiGiacomo said he was very insecure because nobody was helping him out, and then they asked Bobby, "What do you think, Bobby? What do you think about this guy as your co-host?" Bobby said, "Are you guys for real? I'm going." And then Jameson replied, "Hi, Bobby, I know you," and went over the top. Within an hour, he had a contract.
Ah, okay. So
that's Jameson's side of the story.
More exposition, thank you. Vegas Devgin. I didn't see this whole pay-per-view card, but actually owned the Rumble match on DVD because I have the Flair DVD that was released a few years ago. The Rumble match, I believe, was one of the most entertaining matches I have ever seen. The combination of both Gorilla and Heenan was classic. Gorilla was the straight man, and Heenan playing the heel commentator perfectly, with the added spice of him being the manager of Flair at the time. This had to have been one of the best lineups ever, with Hogan, Flair, Macho Man, Davey Boy, Piper, and many others participating in the match. Flair, being in his early 40s at the time, still showed that he had it and was truly the MVP in the ring. The expressions of Heenan when Flair won was a real capper for me. The way he was shouting for joy at Flair's win, the way he bolted from the commentary table and joined Flair in Perfect, is just something that you don't see today, and probably for the good, because could you imagine Cole or Lawler trying to pull that off? Impossible. The whole universe would shit all over that. The promo at the end when Flair said this was the greatest day of my life really sold the importance of the belt. As a match, I would give it a 9.5 out of 10. Truly a classic.
Craig Allen, my favorite Rumble of all time, as this was my first pay-per-view as a super fan from my childhood. I love the commentary during the Rumble, as Heenan and Monsoon are great, and Heenan's reactions to everything in regards to Flair tells a great story. The match had a ton of star power. The undercard doesn't hold up as well watching today, but the Rumble match itself is fantastic, and the post-match Flair interview is an all-time classic.
Danny Powers, I have fond memories of this period of time in wrestling. In late 91, my family had moved to Canada from a small town in Geelong, Australia. Back down under, we had only three channels on television, and I had never seen professional wrestling until I came to Toronto when I was 10. Instantly, I was hooked, and Royal Rumble 92 was one of the first pay-per-views I saw. A friend at school was a big fan, and often we would rent VHS tapes from the local Video 99. Looking back, this was such a great area in the WWF with so many legends on their roster, and it was especially fun if you were a kid at the time because so many wrestlers had colorful and cartoonish gimmicks. I remember being so scared of the Berserker. He gave me nightmares when I was a kid, as did Papa Shango and Nails when they first arrived. 9 out of 10. I love this pay-per-view. High marks for nostalgia alone. On a funny side note, back in grade school in Australia, there was at least one kid who somehow knew about wrestling. He invented this game where all of our friends would climb on these large 3-foot-high concrete tubes in the playground. Then we'd all push and shove each other off until one kid was left standing. He called it the Royal Rumble, and I always thought it was such a weird name until I came to Canada. Well,
guess if you do a Royal Rumble in Australia, you could just have 28 guys and bill it as a 30-man Royal Rumble. Because they round. I'm kidding. Please do not message me again about that. Sam Avery. Living in the UK, we could only get this show on Sky TV with a satellite television, so the day of the pay-per-view, I was forced as a 13-year-old to call up a friend I'd had a fight with and making up with him just so I could see it. At the time, I rather naively believed that anyone, even the Bulldog, could win it, and being utterly appalled at the thought of the old-school, decrepit Flair winning. I remember being so angry when Flair won and sensing a subtle possible heel turn from Hogan when Sid threw him out, as the crowd seemed to be more behind Sid in the arena after Hulk pulled him out. Love the show, guys. Keep up the great work. Mm-hmm. Look at that, Royal Rumble. Reconnecting bridges between friends.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Chris Cox, I remember this event as our whole family got together at my grandmother's house to watch this. I kept remembering family members like my mother who were not fans of wrestling, as people like the Barbarian would lift Flair over their head and not tossing him out to the floor. They then tried to use that reason to tell me wrestling was not real, but I was 10 years old at the time, and I was sure that the reason they didn't want to throw him out was because they wanted to beat on him some more. Anyway, Bobby Heenan got everyone in the house wound up. He was on fire at that time, and we were all ready to see who was going to take the title from Flair at WrestleMania 8, which led to one of my favorite, and in my opinion, underrated matches of all time with Macho Man's career and another family get-together. Try to get my family together for a show now outside of WrestleMania. Yeah, good luck.
Tom Mitchum. This was the first WWF VHS I owned, and sadly the last for several years. The tape got stuck in our VCR, and my dad had to send it away to be fixed. He decided it was because it was a wrestling tape that the machine had broke and banned me from buying anything WWF for the rest of my childhood. My first thought when watching this again is how much better the promos were. I really enjoyed the promo montage prior to the Rumble match. The British Bulldog seemed to get a bit confused, stating he won the Battle Royal at the Albert Hall in his hometown, despite the Albert Hall being approximately 300 miles from his hometown of Leeds. It's also very clear how much better the tag division was. Could you imagine a pay-per-view now with 60% tag matches? It would be a disaster. Brilliant commentary from Gorilla and the Brain throughout. Here's the beef, and there goes the beef. The delight in Gorilla's voice when Flair came out number 3 was so believable. Other thoughts from the Rumble match itself, Flair was brilliant throughout, a lesson in selling. Michaels climbed into the second rope, at which point everyone walks to the other side of the ring, the Boss Man nearly accidentally eliminating himself whilst getting rid of Hercules. The Piper's pop. The pop for Macho and Jake was phenomenal. As Hulk prepares to eliminate Undertaker, Hacksaw gets in the way and nearly ruins the spot. Overall, 7 out of 10 for the pay-per-view, but in my opinion, the single best commentary performance of all time by Bobby and Gorilla.
There are definitely classic.
No more WWF.
No. Well, thank you, everybody, for all your feedback. I'm sorry we can't get to everybody, but...
Yeah, we got a ton for this week, so thanks very much, everybody.
It's a lot of fun hearing about all of your nostalgic experiences watching this show.
So that was the Royal Rumble 1992, everyone, and we're going to wrap things up, but let's take a look at what we are going to be reviewing next week, Wei, because it is your choice.
We are in February, of course, for next week, and going back, I'd like to watch another man's first WWF title win, and that is one Eddie Guerrero. So I'd like to watch No Way Out 2004, Eddie Guerrero versus Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship.
Okay, and that's so weird that you picked that. Last week I was just on YouTube and I watched the go home promo for Eddie on Brock Lesnar heading into that pay-per-view.
Wow.
Holy fuck. I will post this up on the Facebook group. Everyone needs to watch this promo. I remember at the time watching it thinking it was awesome. And it totally holds up.
That's great.
It was great. So very much looking forward to watching that. No Way Out 2004 is coming up next week. And a few notes for the site coming up this week. By the time you're listening to this, most of this stuff should be up. But we're putting up a few classic laws looking back from the Rumbles in 2007, 2008. Oh, I don't even want to say. I have to figure it out which ones we're putting up. But a couple classic laws as well. I've got a 45-minute interview with Bill Apter going up this week, chatting about Pro Wrestling Illustrated, putting together the PWI 500, lots of stuff. And, Wei, you will find out who coined the term the Apter Mags.
Hmm. Cool.
Is here.
Huh.
So find that out. It should be up on the site, actually, by now, so you can go over to liveaudiowrestling.com for that. As well, reviewaway.com. You can follow Wei on Twitter at Wei0937, at Law Radio for my account. And then lots of stuff coming up.
Get in on that Rumble pool. You have a few
more
days.
That's right. tinyurl.com/rumble2012. It's free to join. We're going to be giving away a bunch of prizes, including WWE All-Stars for the Nintendo Wii, the chance to be on this show for a future review. As well, we are going to be giving away a WWE DVD prize pack.
And
so
Law,
for the top three winners.
And Law t-shirts.
Law t-shirts as well. So some very cool prizes coming up. And my last bit of shilling, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, if you're watching the UFC on Fox show, myself and Jason Agnew are going to be recapping the entire show Saturday night at 10 Eastern on TSN Radio, 10:50 a.m. And that's also going to be streaming online. We'll be joined by Loretta Hunt, lots of your calls as well. And then Sunday night, we got the Law at midnight chatting about the Rumble. Very, very busy week.
You are a busy guy, John.
Well, you don't need to sleep. It's overrated. You know that.
Yes.
So we are going to go out here with, what better theme to go out with than the Royal Rumble synthesizer theme that they butchered and replaced on the 24/7 version of the 92 Rumble. That will take us out, and we will chat with you later on this week.